Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. this morning is former Chicago Tribune columnist John Cass, now at johncassnews.com. John?
Yes, and the new column is up right now, the Democrats and their self-inflicted wound crime, as they ask the media to lick that wound. And I think many are licking it.
Well, it's a little early in the morning for licking metaphors, but I appreciate the direction you're taking with it. It's very graphic.
Well, let's put it this way.
John Cass graphic novel.
It's not I wish I could draw. I draw kind of like James Thurber, so it's not really that good. But I think the idea is sound. And it's also sound to be here on WIND AM 560, The Morning Answer, with my friend Dan Proft, and we all know why he's single. So what can we say?
Is that a promo you're recording?
Not yet.
So last week we spent some time with you when the announcement was made that you took the early buyout and you were riding off into the sunset, at least as it pertains to the Tribune, not as it pertains to writing.
Yes.
And basically said there was one more shoe to drop in Chicago media, and it dropped yesterday. Kristen McQuarrie, your colleague and friend, tweeting out yesterday, and my friend, not colleague, I guess colleague in a sense, but
yes.
I don't think I'm in the journalistic space. I don't want to be so presumptuous as to suggest
the idea of you in a Harris tweed jacket with patches,
smoking
a pipe at the editorial board is something I relished and hoped that would happen, but I guess it won't.
I guess that's by the boards. McQuarrie tweeting out some personal news after 9 years on the Chicago Tribune editorial board and page editor since March of last year. Friday will be my last day at the paper. I applied for the buyout, but my application was not accepted. I'll be pursuing other opportunities. Stay tuned. And I understand that, I mean, just before we get to Kristen, that the person that has been selected to replace her is the paper's theater critic. The paper's theater critic is going to be the editor of the Chicago Tribune editorial board. I mean, it's perfect because the paper has turned into a Shakespearean farce.
Well, actually, Chris, I don't know who that is, but if it's Chris Jones.
That's who it is.
He's a very bright man. And
great. I can't wait to.
Good guy.
When Shakespeare kicks back up again, I can't wait to read his editorials.
He's also a Manchester United fan because he's from Manchester.
Sounds like a guy who will have his finger on the pulse of Chicago and Illinois politics.
The loss, I just really want to talk about Kristen. This broadcast, because what it represents to me is the loss of institutional memory. Once again, as I tweeted, she's one of the last reasonable conservative voices. And she's not as conservative as me or you.
No, I know.
But she's fair. And I guess she's conservative the way Democrats were conservative years ago. And the loss is incalculable to the Chicago Tribune.
Well, so I've known Kristen going back to when I was a young political hack before I became an older political hack, and she was at the Daily Southtown. And so we went back and forth starting in legislative races and the 2002 governor's race in particular when I worked for Pat O'Malley. She was still at the Southtown. And, you know, and something you said I just want to pick up on, we disagreed over the years on many issues and many candidates, but she was always reasoned in her views, and she was always open-minded as to people who disagreed with her.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you would think those things, well, that's every journalist. No, that's almost no journalist anymore, really, truly. And so I think of her as an authentic journalist, because I don't even think of her as like the editorial page or the Tribune, which is a lofty post to which she rightly ascended. But I just think of her from the Daily South Town being that reporter, sort of like you started out, sort of a gumshoe reporter.
In the neighborhoods,
yeah,
a reporter,
exactly.
Always knowing, talking to aldermen, talking to elected officials, more importantly, talking to their aides and their backers and their detractors. Backers, knowing how that thing works, the building of institutional memory that way is important. And, you know, now we have journalists who walk in fresh out of journalism school and want to be Washington correspondents.
Well, they're change agents.
That's the biggest change. The woke universities produce not only woke theorists in politics and social.
The journalist activist.
But journalist activist, and she was never one of these, and neither was I hope. And as a result, it's bad for the city because, as we'll get into later, Springfield, when Kristen McQuarrie was interested in something, the people in Springfield paid attention.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So institutional knowledge you talk about, that's the only way you can provide context and consequence to readers. And since that is almost completely absent from the Chicago Press Corps now, or to the extent it's present because there have been people at, say, the network affiliates for a long time, they're sort of blinded by ideology or sacred cowism.
And some are just afraid to... You know, after there's been 50, 60, 70 shootings, I don't see a pack of reporters outside Kim Fox's door, and I don't see a pack of reporters outside Tony Preckwinkle's door asking her, well, do you think your protege, meaning your former secretary that you elevated to this post of prosecutor in Cook County, is she doing the right thing? Nobody's outside Tim Evans' door.
Yeah.
All that's gone now with Kristen, and to some extent I'd say myself, gone.
And nobody is challenging those voters who voted for them. I mean, they're manifestations of the people's will. And so, you know, turning the camera back on the constituents, back on the viewers to say, is this what you voted for? Is this what you want? I'd love to do a focus group, have some enterprising network affiliate do a focus group of Kim Fox voters, of Lori Lightfoot voters, of J.B. Pritzker voters, and, you know, press them on what they think, what they were thinking, what they think now, how one connects to the other. I mean, there's no critical thinking going on in the Chicago Press Corps.
There's some, but there's not enough.
Very, very little. John, on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, morning, guys. Mr. Cass, I tried to get on when you were on talking with Dan and Amy when you left the Tribune. There was probably thousands of callers waiting for you. The article that you wrote that moved me the most was when Father William Chaganos passed away, and you had that full page article about him, and you talked about how great of a man and how great of a priest he was. And when I got out of the firehouse, I raced right to my in-law's house, Mary Jean and Evans Angelos from Holy Apostles. But they already had several copies of it, and we framed it, and it's still in their house today. So I would say that's the comment that moved me the most, and thank you for all you guys do, and thank you, John, for all you've done. Have a great day.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. this morning is JohnCastNews.com's John Cass.
The leggy John Cass.
Blonde-ish.
Not really. More white hair.
So Tucker Carlson, on his show on, what's today, Wednesday, Monday evening, made a rather remarkable claim that per a whistleblower inside the government, the NSA was spying on him, was reading his emails and texts, saying that the information that was repeated back to him could have only come from emails and texts of his that detail some story that he and his showmates were working on. Well, the NSA, well, first Jen Psaki responded to a question about it, and then the NSA responded, and then Tucker responded. It's really interesting. And look, based on what we know about NSA and what we know about the quote-unquote intelligence community per past lying and, frankly, illegal activity, see Kevin Kleinsmith at FBI and the lying on an NSA app.
But that's one, lying on an NSA app is not...
FISA app.
FISA app is not bugging a leading conservative voice.
Well, right. And so, well, let's listen to Jen Psaki responding on behalf
leave
of the
Greeks alone, okay?
Biden administration with some commentary from Tucker.
For its part, the Biden administration just ignored the story. They did not deny the story. They can't. They know that it's true. Today, the president's flack was asked about it on Air Force One. Here's the exchange.
Tucker Carlson said that the NSA is spying on him. Is the administration aware of any espionage or listening efforts on U.S. citizens by the NSA? And is Tucker Carlson one of them?
Well, the NSA, as I think you're well aware, I'm not sure everyone's aware, everyone on this plane is aware, I should say, is an entity that focuses on foreign threats and individuals who are attempting to do us harm on foreign soil. So that is their purview. But beyond that, I would point you to the intelligence community.
What?
It's like she's reading the Wikipedia entry.
It really
ask
is.
Them. But here's what to notice. No denial. Of course, she's right that the NSA is chartered to spy on foreigners, not on Americans. That's illegal. And yet the NSA does routinely spy on Americans. It won't call it spying. That's exactly what it is. Millions of Americans. And sometimes it does it for political reasons. And everyone knows this. Everyone, including sitting members of the Intel Committee. Some of them are paranoid about their own communications. That's true. In Washington, this is just considered fine. But it's not fine. It is dangerous and it's wrong.
James Freeman in the Wall Street Journal had a nice juxtaposition on the topic. A free press serves as a valuable watchdog against government officials who wield enormous power, in theory. In practice, the media establishment prefers acting as a watchdog on behalf of people in government. They're supposed to be a watchdog for the people against government. Instead, they're a watchdog for the government against the people. That's true. That's what it's become. How else to explain this week's disparate treatment of two stories about federal surveillance? Media folk are more angry at a television host who claims that the government spies on him than they are at a former FBI official who admitted that he fabricated evidence that allowed the government to spy on a U.S. citizen. Yeah. I mean, do you have any disagreement with that summation from Freeman?
No, although I have with you that you have earlier, I think, in our discussions, I forget what venue, referred to the press corps as the Palace Guardians. And
Praetorian Guard.
Yes, but the Praetorian Guard had a couple of attributes, like two of them, and they were killers.
Well, that's true.
Okay? And they were killers. They were tough guys. The what we're seeing with the Washington Press Corps and all this media covering up for them is more like the eunuchs of the Ottoman Empire. They are clearly in service to the state. They've always been. They're the kind of personality that seeks that spot. And they pretend to be journalists, but really are, they pretend to be iconoclasts, but then they're always supporting state against the people.
They're bootlickers. They're pathetic bootlickers, generally speaking.
Generally speaking, at least the Washington Press Corps, yes.
Well, Tucker Carlson and his show tried to go right to the source, as he reported on his program last night. They called the NSA's boss, the boss at the NSA right now, tried to get a hold of him, tried to get an answer. And then ultimately, NSA released a statement, and Tucker detailed both.
Just minutes before air tonight, the NSA sent us an infuriatingly dishonest formal statement, an entire paragraph of lies written purely for the benefit of the intel community's lackeys at CNN and MSNBC, all those people they hire with the titles on the screen. They also tweeted it out a few minutes ago. Now, last night on the show, we made a very straightforward claim. NSA has read my private emails without my permission, period. That's what we said. Tonight's statement from the NSA does not deny that. Instead, it comes with this non sequitur. In part, quote, Tucker Carlson has never been an intelligence target of the agency. Okay, glad to know. But the question remains, did the Biden administration read my personal emails? That's the question that we asked directly to NSA officials when we spoke to them about 20 minutes ago in a very heated conversation. Did you read my emails? And again, they refused to say. Again and again. And then they refused even to explain why they couldn't answer that simple question. We can't tell you, and we won't tell you why we can't tell you. My emails. And the message was clear. We can do whatever we want. We can read your personal texts. We can read your personal emails. We can send veiled threats your way to brush you back if we don't like your politics. We can do anything. We're our own country. And there's literally nothing you can do about it. We're in charge. You're not. Orwellian does not begin to describe the experience. It was like living in China. But we should get used to it. Now that the Biden administration has classified tens of millions of patriotic Americans, the kind who served in the military and fly flags in front of their homes, as potential domestic terrorists, white supremacist saboteurs, we're going to see a whole lot more of this kind of thing. A whole lot more.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro, text line.
You buy it?
That's the first of all question, actually. Do you buy it? And secondly, if you do buy it, who's to blame for what the deep state has unleashed?
All of us.
First of all, do you buy it, I guess, is your question.
I've seen canary traps, and I've seen all sorts of tricks in politics in Chicago and elsewhere. And I think that you have to be careful. When somebody dangles bait in front of you, you have to know that there's going to be another hook and another hook and another hook that you can't even see. And you have to be very careful about biting down.
I think that's a good caution.
Right.
But
because the one thing they'd want.
They want you to get outraged
they
by
want
this.
To be and outraged they, and out then, front, and then they undercut him with some sort of drop.
And then they right? and then he's the raving lunatic, and that right. marginalizes him.
Right.
The only thing I would say to that is
not that he is or is not.
No,
I'm
I
just
get
saying
it.
That's the grown-up world.
Right. That it's not things are not immediately what they seem, right. and that's how they get you in a corner because you're suspicious of them, so they. Prey on that suspicion,
of course,
to make you look like you're the bad guy rather than you have legitimate suspicions, but then you sort of overreach because you didn't have it all together.
That's why every columnist needs an editor, and mine was Kristen McQuarrie. Thank you.
Well, I get that, but the NSA's response, I think, helps buttress Tucker's case.
Sure.
Because they didn't say, that is ridiculous. We don't do that. We would never do that. The programming decisions are left up to networks and not the NSA. So we have no interest in who is or isn't on the air. It wasn't any sort of categorical statement other than to say he's not an intelligence target. And to Tucker's point, which I think is a fair one, I specifically said you read my emails and texts. Did you read my emails and texts? And we get the non sequitur, sort of the wave off of you're not an intelligence target. So I think he may be onto something. And again, I don't think the NSA deserves the benefit of the doubt anymore
After Clapper lied to Congress
and Russiagate
and whatever that was called, Russiagate.
Yeah.
And all the Washington press corps, the bootlickers, the eunuchs of the Kemalists of Washington, carrying water for people like Adam Schiff, and then giving themselves bleeping Pulitzer Prizes.
Well, right. I mean, John Brennan at CIA and the DNIs like Clapper and the interplay between them, the relationships they have. So NSA, FISA, CIA, even FBI, why should any of those entities be given the benefit of the doubt? I think they've lost the benefit of the doubt. Is that unfair? Is that being a raving lunatic? I don't think so. I think it's, and by the way, this goes back to Eric Holder and spying on journalists.
James Rosen.
Yes. At Fox.
And
the
complaints then by Washington journalists that Obama was the worst offender of press rights that they'd ever seen. So, and then they lick his boots.
So
I almost said behind.
Well, we're to say, though, I mean, think about this. We're to say, so all the illegal surveillance of the Trump campaign, and then we're supposed to forget any of that happened. We're supposed to forget the Mueller investigation and what it didn't turn up.
24/7.
We're supposed to forget that, even though it was 24/7, and we're supposed to treat Tucker Carlson completely out of context. This is some sort of allegation coming out of left field. No, unfortunately, it's not coming out of left field. That's the unfortunate part, which is why Tucker Carlson probably is worthy of the benefit of the doubt in this case, because he has a lot to risk, too, by making such a statement and having to prove up that statement. But I think it's hard to convey how serious this is or how unbelievable this is. The NSA, because we're inured to it. Oh, they spied on John. There's spying going on James Rosen. There's spying going on by the state against the campaign of a political opponent, effectively, for President of the United States. That continued when he was President of the United States. And now they're going after another Fox News guy. It was James Rosen in Jobama terms, the first two Jobama terms. Now it's going to be Tucker Carlson this term.
It's the IRS going after people who disagreed with Obama. Course. It's the federal hammer. I want you all to think of this, okay? Think of like the Daily Machine crushing some guy with a hot dog stand or a diner. Okay? Think of him crushing you. And think of that hammer, how powerful it is in the hands of an unscrupulous mayor. Now think of it how larger with the federal government. And then on top of that, you have media basically falling apart. The media is falling apart into camps, into tribal camps. So that the American people don't trust them. What's the latest poll? Well, the American media is the least trusted media in the world.
Yeah. So in the 40s, at least.
But you have, I think it's like less, but you have all that going on. And the Republic is in peril, my friends. The Republic is in peril.
And again, we're just numb to it, though.
Wuhan lab.
This topic.
All right. Yeah.
You go back to June of 2013. Holder ducks NSA phone recording questions in Senate hearing as it happened. It's not appropriate to talk about these things. So that's almost a decade ago. You just bob and weave. You do the little beltway two step, and it's just on to the next thing. Clapper lied. Holder pried. Now we got NSA potentially reviewing Tucker Carlson's texts and emails.
And they're always going to throw some shiny object in front of people, like some moron talking about race, to get you off the issue.
Ralph and Rantoul.
Yeah, good morning. Well, if you've read anything that Eric Snowden has put out, in irrespective of whether your views of him, you know, is that he's a hero hacker or a techno traitor, right? I mean, his claims have been for a long time, to anybody who listens, the NSA and the U.S. government has been collecting data like this on everything worldwide, this giant electronic Hoover sucking up information. And the only thing that keeps them from being as dangerous as that really is the algorithms of sorting through all of that information or that data and turning it into information is lacking. That the ability to pull it in is better than the ability to analyze it. So if you're an unpopular person like Tucker right now, who is making fun of justly, you know, the administration, and his stuff is getting pulled out because they know who he is and he's a mouthpiece, doesn't surprise me. I think all of us should be worried. I mean, just our own private conversations getting sucked into this gigantic bank of computers.
Well, right.
A lot of scare the crap out of all of us.
Thanks for the call, Ralph. Well, it's not only that, you know, they're monitoring us and they could come in. It's that this is political in nature. That's why political U.S. government political surveillance. So it's to political ends. So even if they don't get you, they can get you by ruining you. In other words, even if they don't prove up the thread that they started. So the obvious Russian collusion being the obvious right. example. Even if they don't prove it up, they paralyze an administration to some extent for 2 years. They cast this cloud over the President of the United States for 2 years and in the minds of half the population for the rest of his life, even though there was no there that was proved up. But they didn't need it. All they needed was enough of a basis to get a phony baloney rubber-stamped FISA warrant and then unleash the parallel fishing expeditions. And you mentioned the IRS from Joe Obama terms two, one and two, same thing. All they need is some indication that that this would run afoul of their view on the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. And then they start asking your group what prayers you're going to recite before they confer your 501c3 status. All they need is the thread to make your life miserable, to sideline you, to cast you in ill repute, even if they don't put you behind bars.
The people that I know in the intelligence community and FBI, people I know, are really concerned about this kind of thing. They're concerned about the rights of individuals, of Americans in a republic. The people who aren't concerned, I think, in my opinion, are those masters, the bureaucrats, part of the state, the people who protect themselves and go after their enemies.
You know how you can tell?
And they always have some willing yeah. servant.
You know who you can tell if people are concerned at all about the rights and freedoms of others? Is that they address these questions, they address these concerns, rather than just getting the back of the hand dismissal. This isn't happening kind of response, yeah. which you get from Brennan and Clapper and their servants, as you describe them, their handmaidens on CNN and MSNBC and in the D.C. press corps, generally speaking.
The Washington Post, the New York Times.
What you say, what you're asking, is it happening? Is that is not happening. It's not a concern. And to even ask the question is ridiculous. That's how you know somebody's in on it.
The sea change between the time of Watergate, when there was public concern about this, and the lack of media concern now is stunning.
Greg in Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, guys. There's a few things. One about Ralph, you know, we don't need the government to analyze it all. Google's doing it all for them. And, you know, we got these enormous bureaucracies that the heads of these guys, like you said, Dan, they don't care who the senators are or congressmen or even presidents. Look what they did to Trump. And they just do whatever they want, and they figure, hey, a couple of years, this guy will be out of office, and I don't have to worry about him anymore. And it's got a lot more than just the FBI and the NSA. You got the Department of Agriculture and every other department coming on down on people if they don't like what they're doing. And lastly, with respect to the rank and file and all these organizations, you know, I hear what you're saying, John, that these people are concerned about it, but you know what? None of them, and I mean none of them, or mind-numbingly few of them, are coming out and saying something about it, especially when they know what's going on. They just keep doing their job, doing what they're told, just like here in Chicago, and waiting for that pension to kick in, and then go out and get another job doing something else on a consulting gig.
All I bring up to you, and I know we're running short, but look, years ago, after 9/11, people were saying to me, and you may have heard it throughout the country, I don't care if they look at my cell phone. I have nothing to hide. And everybody who said that and who accepts the cameras on you every minute, we're all part of it. We're all part of the acceptance.
Frank in Arlington Heights.
Good morning. I think I'm going to go back to getting a landline. This is Thomas Hobbes' Leviathan.
Yes, it is.
Combined with Jeremy Bentham's Panopticon. That's what this is. We live in a dystopia. We live in a world where really a lot of this stuff just doesn't even matter. Our political attempts to try and correct this don't matter. They don't. It's just they don't have the consent of the governed. 15% to 20% of the people trust the federal government. Used to be 70% back in 1960. It doesn't matter, though.
Thanks for the call, Frank. And I always appreciate Frank's calls because rarely do you get a Jeremy Bentham and Thomas Hobbes reference in the same call. Very good. And I agree. I agree with what he's saying, too, on the substance.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and it for Amy J this morning is JohnCastNews.com's John Cass. You may remember him from a paper nearly defunct called the Chicago Tribune.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Okay.
But now there's JohnCastNews.com. So come on over, subscribe, because, you know, I need it.
A tale of two John Casses.
Yeah, there you go.
A Evanston teacher has filed a federal lawsuit against one of the worst school districts in the country. Evanston-Skokie District 65. We've talked about it a lot on this show because they're at the tip of the spear when it comes to the sexualization of children and promoting racism in the primary grades. Congratulations, Evanston and Skokie.
Why? Because there's nothing like telling a 7-year-old girl that she's an oppressor yeah. and making her bear the sins, real or imagined, of generations.
Well,
that's not child abuse.
Mm-hmm. The teacher, Kim Herman, has filed a lawsuit saying that she's a drama teacher, and what she is being imposed upon to teach is violative of the U.S. Constitution. For example, the district directed teachers to participate in racially segregated affinity groups. Most of this we've covered, but we'll cover it again because it bears repeating now that somebody's actually taking up the fight in federal court. Directed teachers to participate in racially segregated affinity groups, which were the subject of a federal civil rights complaint. The policies advanced by the superintendent there, a guy named Devon Horton, favor racial minorities over white students. He's listed, along with his deputy, as a defendant in the suit that was filed yesterday. Good. Other things, just just for example, give you a flavor for what's happening, since I know, according to so many left-wing pundits and politicians, that critical race theory is not happening. It's not being, there is no critical race theory instruction in the primary or secondary grades because it's so heady, it's so complex that it is only taught in a few law schools.
And that's the best of the left-wing pundits. The worst of them, and I think there are many, when they're not telling fart jokes in the newspapers, are telling people that if you even bring it up, you're a racist and should be shunned.
Right. The so just a couple more examples. K through second grade teachers are tasked with asking students, what is your understanding of whiteness? Fourth grade teachers were instructed to ask how whiteness showed up in a political cartoon. Fifth grade teachers were instructed to preface the book, Not My Idea, in which the devil approaches the main character with a contract binding you to whiteness. That's the plot. Fifth grade teachers were instructed to preface the book with a statement about white people playing a big role in the problems of racism today and throughout world history. I hate white people.
So do I.
The other such ideological statements that are offered as part of this curriculum. Pretending to not see color is called colorblindness and
sin.
Colorblindness helps racism. Many white people use colorblindness to ignore the problem of racism. But this is not happening, although it's documentable. But okay. By the way, I think I misidentified. The lawyer in the case is Kim Herman. The teacher in the case, the drama teacher that filed the suit, is a woman named Stacey DeMar.
You know many drama teachers or theater people, Dan? I know that, you know, Dan has many sides to his personality.
Sure.
One of them is not...
Like Split, like M. Night Shyamalan. Yeah.
One of them is not hanging out with theater people. I'm just guessing.
I am a great patron of the arts in Chicago.
Yes, you are.
But I don't hang out with them.
You don't hang out with
not
them?
Not really.
And the point being that I have, because Betty was a modern dancer and a choreographer, and I've been in that milieu.
And because the newly minted editor of the Chicago Tribune editorial page is a theater critic.
I'm not going to touch it. But the point being that you don't regularly see conservatives, you know, people who would read The Road to Serfdom are not doing one-act plays on at Links Hall on Clark Street, okay? I'm just trying to suggest that.
Right.
And so for this teacher to stand up, I think, what is her name again?
Stacey DeMar.
She deserves a lot of credit.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And I have a sense that she was mainly interested in teaching drama, you know, being a drama teacher and all. Right. And she was a lot less interested in trying to indoctrinate kids into believing that colorblindness advances racism.
She made the mistake of thinking that the United States is not North Korea, but it is, according to many.
Well, and so, you know, this is, again, starting to see the snowball roll downhill a little bit. We've documented what's going on in Loudoun County, Virginia, and the revolt against the school board and because of the curriculum there. You have this case now filed in federal court against Evanston Skokie District 65. You have Virginia parents also filing suit. You had what happened in that wealthy enclave in Dallas where they sidelined critical race theory there. Nevada charter schools instructed to link aspects of their identity with oppression. And we have, I'm blanking on her name now, but we talked to the mom of the students who relayed what was happening, and she interceded. So you're starting to see this.
I heard that interview. She's an black woman.
Yes.
And it was just brilliant.
I'm blanking on her name now. I'm getting old.
It was last week, I think.
I can't remember things from last week.
Crushed vegetables.
I'll find her name. I retweeted the interview, too, because she was so good. But anyway, so the important point is that you see this happening around the country. And if it can happen in Evanston Skokie District 65, then it can and should be happening everywhere. I mean,
isn't it happening in this Chicago suburbs with the Chardonnay Antifa that elected what's her name for that the socialist that's replaced Danny Lipinski?
Oh, Marie Newman.
Yeah, where are these people? Where's the LaGrange, Hinsdale? Where are you? Where are you, Western Springs, my old town? Where are they?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, maybe, I don't know. I don't know the answer, but if a drama teacher in Evanston can step up, then.
You think a banker from Western Springs could step up? Yeah, maybe.
Gabriel Clark. That's her name, the Nevada parent and charter school proponent. And, you know, and there are these, there's organizations set up now, by the way, for example, the one representing this drama teacher in Evanston, Stacey DeMar.
Do you think they're afraid? Do you think they're just, people are just afraid to stand up?
Well, obviously. I mean, what else would, by the way, the representing her, Southeastern Legal Foundation. So there's also resources that I just want to get this important point, then I'll address. There are resources available. There are these public interest law firms that have been set up to represent people want to come forward. She's like, well, I would do it. I'm not afraid, but it's a resource issue. Well, it's not a resource issue because you have foundations like the one representing this teacher in Evanston, representing Gabriel Clark in Nevada. The resources are out there if you have the courage to engage in the battle. But I mean, what else? If it's not resource related, or you know, lack of understanding that the resources are out there, what else could it be besides fear? And by fear, I mean social status.
Yeah,
that's really what it is. Especially in the leafy suburbs you mentioned, it's all social status. It's friend circle social status, which is why
Starbucks outside.
And this is what I pushed this idea before, even to some conservative groups that don't agree with me or just find it too gauche and pimply or something. But, you know, shame is powerful. And it's about time in these parental circles that you don't just wait until the barbarians are at the gate or inside the gate before you decide to fight. You understand what they're doing. You hear what they're saying.
They're doing it to your kids.
And you know it. You know what they're going to do because they're telling you all the time at baseball games and PTA meetings and cocktail parties. They're telling you who they are. So you know what they're going to do. And you should be arguing, you know, meeting them wherever they are and prosecuting the case everywhere you can. Using shame in the other direction, all this, you're a racist and that backs me down. I'm going to name call you. I'm going to say you're not enlightened. I'm going to say this and I'm going to say that. But people are unwilling to, you know, go on offense within their circles of influence.
I'm asking everybody out there.
Don't you
everybody
think?
Listening to us, are you unwilling to take a stand when your children are being abused, violently, psychologically abused? You can allow that. I mean, you had the guy on yesterday from Bloomington. Was it yesterday?
Yeah, Ty Smith.
Ty Smith stood up for his family and his sons. He's not making excuses. Why are people making
excuses? Or tolerating excuses be made, and that's from the kids, much less the parents. Yeah, I know. Well, I don't know. I mean, you used to
have kids.
Yeah. Well, but you used to ambulate in those circles in the leafy suburbs.
Yeah, you know what? I was the guy who'd go to JC's pub in McCook, all right, and have an honest pour, or go to the diner and have my Greek chicken. I wasn't the guy who went to V. That's the difference. You know why? Because I went to V, and it's a great restaurant. I've been there several times.
Yeah.
But the first time I went, they had...
Because they require a collared shirt, is that why?
No, because I wear a jacket and tie on Saturday mornings, for God's sake.
Of course.
I'm a gentleman.
Of course.
But I went there, and they had... I ordered chicken, because Joe Tiber said, order the chicken, it's good. They brought me chicken, and there were like three little pieces. I'm like, what are these little legs?
It's called portion control, John.
Yeah, I've started to learn that. I've had to.
Cassandra in Ravenswood.
Good morning. If I had kids right now, I would have the very daunting task of schooling them myself. and you know how very tough that would be. Let's remember, Evanston is the place that, I don't know if it was 6 years ago or 8 years ago, voted to make biology will now be focused on evolution and climate change, not the life and structure of a cell, not the, any part of your anatomy or anything biological.
Right. Not this science.
People are.
Thanks for the call, Cassandra. Yeah, not to mention it, we're talking, it's the home of reparations and Northwestern University, all kinds of bad ideas.
Right.
Joe in Naperville.
No, I'm a little bit confused on something. I hope you can maybe answer this question. If I have to go to a workplace where I'm being taught and I have to go to training where I'm being told I'm an oppressor, I'm a racist, my kids have to go to school and do the same thing, why can't I sue my employer in the school for defamation of character?
I think it's a thanks for the call, Joe. I think that's a tougher case to make out because it's sort of a group assignment. I think the better play is the federal civil rights play, discrimination
64.
Play. It's just the better cause of action.
But it's going to get there. It's just, here's the problem. It's eventually going to get there, and with the Supreme Court, we'll have to deal with it. But in the meantime, how many countless thousands of young children will be broken by this Marxist BS?
Yeah, the Supreme Court, it was disappointing they put off hearing that Harvard case, that Harvard admissions case this term. John in Wakanda.
Yeah, good morning, Dan, and good morning, John. I want to talk about the teachers here. The teachers, that teacher has a lot of guts, filed a lawsuit, because you have teachers that believe in it and gladly teach it. You have teachers that they maybe believe in it a little bit, but they still want to teach it. Then you have teachers that teach it. They don't believe in it at all, but they teach it because they have to keep their gig. And this one is really brave to stand up and say this. But one more thing. Doesn't the teacher have to look inside themselves and say, look, I know that I am corrupting the future youth, the ones I'm teaching. I know I'm corrupting their brains forever, but I'm still going to stay here and teach it, even though I don't believe it because I need the money or I want the money. That's just, think about that for a second.
Yeah, thanks for the call, John. Well, I mean, there is the sort of train the trainer version in the academy, indoctrinate the indoctrinated. Right. So they're indoctrinated, these aspiring teachers get indoctrinated at ed schools, at universities, and then they turn around and are dispatched to government school systems where they indoctrinate the kids. And so sort of they're blind to their own ideology. Not all of them, but I mean,
I'm the father of one.
There's some. Right.
I'm the father of a dedicated special ed teacher who cares about his kids. And he's not interested in the politics because he's trying to help these kids deal with, you know, tasks that they're trying to deal with.
I agree. But what I'm talking about is what you see as represented by the Chicago Teachers Union and a plurality, I would argue, of the teachers in that union. Not all. It's never all.
Right. Because
not even a majority, but a plurality.
They were silent and let people like Jesse Sharkey, the front man for Stacey Gates, who's the real juice in that union, take over, and they kiss.
Yeah.
Pritzker kisses their butt, and Lightfoot does too, and so does Preckwinkle and all the Democrats.
But I think John is right. So this isn't about necessarily going after the apparatchiks. They're lost for the time being. They're going to have to come to terms on their own. But people who hold themselves out as persons of integrity, who whisper support, what they're not doing, or that what they're unwilling to do, those who know better but refuse to argue for better, fight for better. That's a problem.
Silence is violence, says the left.
Well,
Dan?
I wouldn't go that far, but I would say that you're not who you say you are if you're unwilling to be that person publicly. Otherwise, you're just another person who is advancing authoritarianism by living a different life privately than you live publicly. Will in Skokie.
Hey, how you doing? Like I said, I'm conservative, but I live in Skokie, which is very liberal. And even we call Evanston the People's Republic of Evanston. I was, about a week ago, I had a T-shirt made. It had a rainbow on it, and it said, celebrate the electromagnetic spectrum Pride Month. And I wore it down into Evanston, and I got attacked physically twice. And people yell, "You're appropriating, you're appropriating." Yeah, you guys are appropriate. It's also Noahide Covenant, you know, Pride Month. But it's weird. You know, if you're religious, you say Noahide Covenant Pride Month. If you're not, you say, you know, if you're secular, you say Electromagnetic Spectrum Month. Anyway. Well, it's just crazy at Evanston. It's weird. Have a good. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. Well, yeah, no kidding.
Odd, isn't it, that so many reporters live in Evanston and Oak Park?
Right.
Kristen.
Yeah.
McQuarrie is a Southwest Sider, as am I.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I just love, this is a shouting match at Evanston. You're appropriating. No, I'm not. Coming up, we'll take a break.
The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer
on AM 560, The Answer.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and it for Amy this morning is JohnCastNews.com's John Cass.
Hey, Dan. Hey, everybody. Hope you read my latest column.
JohnCastNews.com. Sign up, too.
Yeah, sign up.
Tell them to sign up.
Sign up so you could read about the media and the Democrats.
Continuing our conversation about critical race theory and K through 12 education in particular, we're talking about this teacher, this Stacey DeMar, drama teacher, suing in federal court against Evanston Skokie School District 65. Max Eden writing for RealClearPolicy.com. He's over at the American Enterprise Institute. Anybody who tries to peddle that the line that CRT is just talking about racism is either gaslighting or being gaslit themselves. And anyone who maintains that CRT is simply an academic theory discussed in law school at best is ignorant of what CRT really is, like your former colleague Clarence Page.
It sounds like he was referring to Clarence, yeah.
He certainly fits that description, unfortunately. And I like Clarence, but
me too.
He's wrong on critical race theory. Max Eden goes on to say, by contrast, parent intuitions about CRT are spot on. Given CRT informs so many aspects of education policy and pedagogy, the real crux of the issue for parents is, as Andrew Sullivan adroitly put it, the issue is not teaching about critical race theory, it is teaching in critical race theory. Right? About is an academic exercise. In is indoctrination. That's pretty simple and effective way to put it. Let me give you an example of that, of both of the gaslighting or having been gaslit on critical race theory. A perfect case study is Joy Reid, who is one of these fungible MSNBC hosts. She had Chris Rufo on the show recently. He's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. We've had him on the show, who has really taken the point on fighting critical race theory academically and politically. And he's not shy about saying that it's in part political. And this is how Joy Reid tried to go at him and say, this is just you advancing, you know, conservative electoral political interests or some such thing. No, it's just him being shrewd in terms of the strategy to defeat what Andrew Sullivan referenced, to defeat what the left is doing in the schools. So Reid starts with word games, and she and Rufo have a little back and forth on that to the extent that he was allowed to get a word in edgewise.
Well, I'll say two things. First of all, it's very interesting to me that so many people are now running away from the race of label of critical race theory.
But he's not a critical race theorist.
Hold on. I'm going to quote two critical race theorists. Barbara Applebaum in the book Being Good, Being White. She says, quote, all white people are racist. Robin DiAngelo, who's another critical whiteness studies scholar, says that,
theorist.
Quote,
nope.
all white identity is inherently racist.
So
what you're doing is you're playing a series of word games.
Nope.
You know that critical whiteness studies is a subfield of critical race theory.
No, it's not.
These things are all deeply interrelated.
No, they're not. They're
and,
not.
And I'm not going to let you play word games. And this is really the most essential thing.
Hold on. No.
Let me respond at least once. I haven't gotten a full sentence out.
Mm-hmm. No, they're not. Not a Robin DiAngelo, who's, you know, got a bestseller on her hands, White Fragility, and is being paid tens of thousands of dollars at corporate retreats and bull jive sessions to advance whatever's called critical race theory, whatever her version of critical race theory is.
I had to go through that crap at the Tribune.
Right. I mean, this idea, like, she's not a critical race theorist. You know, Joy Reid wants, this is so, again, this is so esoteric. This is so deep. This is 400 level at a law school. It's not. And secondly, because critical race theory has been so branded in a multitude of directions, you have a lot of people terming themselves critical race theorists, whether you describe them as such or not, it's the same deal. It's teaching in, not teaching about.
Understand this. They didn't like the word liberal, so they changed it to progressive. They don't like the idea that they're all about defunding the police. So now they're saying, as I write today in johncastnews.com, that they're all about reimagining the police. It's the same thing. They want to cover their behinds. And right here, what? Dan Prof just explained it. They're not critical race theories. Whatever they say they are, they're walking back on that, not on the idea, but on the terminology, on the branding.
Well, right, and with respect to defund the police now it's come 180 degrees. Now it's Republicans who tried to defund police. That's
right,
the new line.
Psaki. Nah, Mutsa.
And as Max Eden wrote about, Chris Rufo said in his exchange when he was, again, allowed to eke out a few sentences, parents know what's happening. And frankly, Joy Reid knows that too, which is why she's trying to delegitimize Chris Rufo.
Right. What I don't think is right is that forcing 8-year-olds in Cupertino, California to deconstruct their racial identities
That's
and then rank themselves
theory.
According to power and privilege. Power and privilege. It's intersectionality theory, which was invented
That's
by Kimberly Crenshaw.
That's intersectionality. It's a separate thing.
Which
intersectionality
is
part of a separate
critical race
thing.
Theory.
No, it's
you,
not, dear.
You had her on your
it's
show.
Not.
You know
she's
this.
A, yeah, she invented
and
both
bottom
things.
Line, Joy.
She invented
what you've
both
done
things.
In tonight's segment she's is an, exactly what I'm fighting against. I'm fighting against the manipulation of language. I'm fighting
right.
against
you're,
language
you're fighting against wokeness and you
I'm
don't like corporate wokeness, etc. I get
euphemistic terms with subversive content. Because otherwise, you just say whatever you want, and then you back away from it, and you dance around it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not going to happen. Parents all over this country, they know what's happening in schools. They know what's happening in their public institutions. And you're seeing people revolt against this divisive identity politics. And you can dance all you want, but you're not going to stop people from understanding what's happening in their classrooms.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Peter Wood. He's the president of National Association of Scholars. Peter, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good morning.
Morning. It seems per a recent piece you wrote for The Spectator that you're seeing the same thing Chris Rufo is saying that we are seeing, which is parents' intuition are intuitively getting what's happening and they're not liking it and they shouldn't be liking it. They're getting it right.
Parents are certainly getting it right. I guess what happened is that a year of being at home while their kids were being instructed on Zoom, they saw firsthand what was going on, the critical race theory and its associated brands are everywhere, and they basically come down to the idea that America is an inherently racist society, that everything we do, everything we've been, is rooted in the oppression of black people and the privileging of white people. Now, you could call that by a dozen different names, but it's the same thing no matter what name you put on it. And Chris Rufo is spectacular on this. He has got right to the heart of it, and people like Joy Reid are quite nervous about his success. But they should be more than nervous about his success. This has spread into school board meetings from coast to coast. When I was writing that article for The Spectator, my hands were full of examples. I went through about 30 states, and in every state there were multiple instances of school boards rising up, or parents rising up at school board meetings saying, enough is enough. They're running into the obstacle that our school boards are basically dominated by people who are elected with the support of the teachers unions, and the teachers unions are one of the seedbeds of critical race theory. They've been to these schools of education that don't really teach anything about education. They just teach how to propagandize kids for social justice and racial justice and the sort of alphabet soup of justices now, anything other than real justice.
Well, and to your point, and by the way, there's another good case study. I just want to make sure we're of Loyola Academy and Wilmette here, where parents are really taking up the fight. And donors, like big donors, have gotten involved, too, saying we're not donating to the school anymore. And that matters for a private Catholic school like Loyola. So that fight continues because the administration is recalcitrant to acknowledge what parents have now unearthed. Because they've, you know, and this happens in private schools, too. I don't want just want to focus on teachers unions, because in the private schools like Loyola Academy and Wilmette on the north shore of the city, wealthy area, they lost their staff. They lost the teachers. They hired a bunch of social justice Catholic teachers or non-Catholics, but social justice warriors, Catholic or not Catholic, and they lost control of their school. So now the administrators are in a pickle. We don't have control of our teachers and administrators, and we're losing control of our parents who don't like what our teachers and administrators are doing. So now what do?
Well, you know, I'm afraid the only real answer to that is to start over.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot have a decent curriculum well taught by a bunch of people who are ideologues who are dedicated to tearing down the country. That's what we've got.
Mr. Wood, this is John Cass. I wonder, I'm fully in support of what you and Rufo and others are saying about critical race theory in the schools, but to your point about starting over, is it worth it for parents and for their communities to engage in this long-term fight with basically the Chicago, the teachers' unions, the Democrats and their allies in the media? Or is it perhaps better to push national school choice and start over in their own communities the way they want?
Well, I favor school choice, and I favor federal measures that would make that possible. But I think this is one of these wars where you have to be ready to fight on a number of fronts. And just giving up on the schools is not a good idea. A lot of families have no choice but to attend to the public schools. People who want very high-quality education sometimes need to turn to the Catholic schools, other private schools. So I think both things are the answer. It's not simply a choice between one and the other. In the long term, we need school choice, but in the immediate deal, we've got to go against what has happened to our public schools. Have been taken over.
And you have to go talk to your kids' teachers, too, and principals, and I mean, it's and school board, but at all fronts, like you say. I know it because this one of the talking points that we discussed at the outset here, that this isn't really happening, really. The Zinn Education Project, Howard Zinn. Howard Zinn, who wrote, for those who know, People's History of the United States about 40 years ago, which has been a staple of government schools' history courses in the intervening four decades. By the way, a great book, Debunking Howard Zinn by Mary Graber, if people want to pick that up or make sure their kid reads it if he's being forced to read Howard Zinn. But the Zinn Education Project, more than 5,000 teachers pledged to teach the truth despite new state bills against it. That is a statement in support of critical race theory instruction in the schools. And the Zinn Project has got 5,000 teachers. I'm sure they can get tens of thousands of more. But this just speaks to the teacher as activist infrastructure that is built around K through 12 school systems.
Right. The Zinn Project is hand in glove with the 1619 Project, the New York Times' effort to promote a version of critical race theory. The Zinn Project was one of the first to endorse the 1619 Project. Yes, the teachers, a large number of them have been radicalized, and they are determined to thwart the public will as far as teaching real American history, real American civics. This is a battle that's occurring in state legislatures. Illinois, I'm afraid, has already thrown in the towel. Undo legislation that's already been passed.
He is Peter Wood, President of the National Association of Scholars. Peter, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And he joined us at the turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. And in for Amy this morning is JohnCassNews.com's John Cass. You may remember him from a soon-to-be-defunct newspaper called the Chicago Tribune. He's now at JohnCassNews.com.
And you're all welcome to come over.
Should, and sign up. So, John, we covered this when it occurred, and the video went around the world. A Polish pastor named Arthur Pawlowski in Alberta province, up there in Strange Brew Land, north of the border, when he was preparing, I believe, for Sunday service, and police showed up to do a COVID check to make sure that he was not ministering in violation of Canada's COVID strictures, and this happened.
Please get out. Get out of this property immediately. Get out. Get out of this property immediately. Out. I don't want to hear anything. Out of this property immediately. I don't want to hear a word. Out. Out. Out of this property immediately until you come back with a warrant. Out. 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 Out of this property immediately. Out. Immediately go out and don't come back.
I only wish that more priests in my faith tradition, that would be the Catholic Church, would have been so strident against the overreaches of the state, the infringements on religious liberty by the state during so much of the COVID lockdowns. He also was arrested later on, Pawlowski becoming a bit of a target for police, as I'm sure you're not surprised. This is a message in anticipation of his arrest.
Hello, friends. This is Pastor Art Pawlowski. If you're watching this video, that means they have successfully arrested me and I am in jail. If you would like to support me, if you would like to support Rebel News and the legal team that is trying their best to get me out of this trouble, please go to safearthur.com. Please donate. Please help. Help me, help my family, help my wife and my children to get me out of this horrible, illegal situation. Please go to safearthur.com and get me out of this if you can.
Well, here's what happened after the video. I was thrown like a piece of meat behind a police vehicle, and I had to go for about an hour, hour and a half, back of a police car, laying down on my hands and my handcuffs. So I had bruises all over the place, almost broke my my shoulder. So that was until we got to Spy Hill. Then, of course, the processing unit. With my brother, we were taken to two different separate cells. They're not allowing us to sleep. So 24 hours, I can't sleep. The lights are so bright, it's absolutely crazy. Even though other inmates, for example, across from my cell, they turned the lights off and he could go to sleep. I don't have that same courtesy. We do not have blankets. We do not have pillows, nothing. We had to spend the whole day yesterday and the whole night and half a day right now on a cold concrete. So that's the situation here. I was never contacted by a lawyer. Yeah, it's shocking. The treatment, I'm being viewed here as a monkey in a circus. From time to time, police will come and just look through the window, or, you know, like a trophy. But I'm in a good spirit. I'm not going to quit. I was handcuffed, rafted, thrown like a piece of meat behind the police van and taken to jail where I'm standing because I can't even sit anymore. You know, how long can you sit and lay on the concrete? So I'm walking around the cell waiting for my release so I can file my lawsuits against those people, because that's what I want next. I want to start going after those villains. They're villains. They're wicked, evil people.
Villains, wicked, evil people. And remember, this is all because he wanted to hold service wanted to preach. Arthur Pawlowski is the pastor of Cave of Adullam Congregation in Calgary. He's also the founder and pastor of Street Church Ministries, where he engages in open-air preaching and Christian street outreach. And he's on tour, including right here in Elmhurst tonight. Elmhurst, 7 p.m. at the Diplomat West, right there on North Avenue. 7 p.m. Courageous Faith Tour, which is also a Reopen America tour. Maybe he's given up on Canada. I'm not sure. Tickets are $22 a person. More information at fecunited.com. fecunited.com. Again, tonight, Diplomat West in Elmhurst on North Avenue, 7 p.m., the Courageous Faith Tour featuring Pastor Arthur Pawlowski. Pastor Pawlowski, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me in.
Well, we really appreciate the example. I'll just speak for myself. I appreciate it. I know John does, too, the example that you set for faith leaders around the world over the last couple of months. And just sort of tell us where things stand vis-a-vis you and Canadian authorities before we get to the tour.
Well, 2 days ago, I had been found with my brother David and another restaurant owner. We were found guilty. I was found guilty on two accounts. I'm facing 4 years jail time as we speak if they would proceed with the full measure of the penalties. So we don't know. The judge reserved his sentencing for next month, 27th of July. So the situation is very serious. Canadian government is pursuing this open and ongoing intimidation, harassment, persecution, and prosecution of anyone that dares to oppose those crazy COVID restrictions. We are not the only ones that are being targeted right now. It feels more and more that, you know, America and Canada, it's, you know, Canada is behind the Iron Curtain. And I find this ironic because when I escaped Poland on a Russian boat with my mom and my brother, we escaped to Poland from Poland to Canada for freedom. And when we met a Canadian embassy representative in Athens, we were told to come to Canada specifically because no one will ever hunt us down for our religion, that Canada is the freest nation on earth. Now I feel more and more like I'm living again behind the Iron Curtain. Not only clergymen are being targeted, there is a pastor right now that is still in prison. I'm not kidding you. He did a church service outdoors after his church was locked by the authorities. The locks were changed, and he took the church outside. The helicopters were looking for him and his congregation. They found him. The next day, he was arrested in front of his 8 children. He's still in prison. He was denied bail. He cannot come out. He's going to spend a month until he can see the judge in prison. Political opponents in Canada are being arrested right now. For example, the leader of the People's Party's next prime minister has been arrested for attending a rally, refusing to wear a muzzle on his face. Derek Sloan, who is a member of parliament, has been ticketed $100,000 ticket because he attended, he dared to speak at the Freedom Rally. Police officers are losing their jobs if they handshake with the Freedom Rallies, if they embrace anyone, if they say anything contrary to the Communistic Party of Canada right now, they lose their jobs, they're being reprimanded, punished, doctors are censored, deplatformed. Anyone that dares to bring the truth, anyone that dares to say, listen, there is no pandemic, the hospitals are empty. My mom was in a hospital for over a month, and she was the only patient, only one on the floor. So we're being lied. The hospitalizations in Calgary, Alberta, for example, we had our record lows. ICUs, a record low from 2015. We're being lied. We're being played. It looks like they're reading the same script globally. And I am here in the United States with a simple message. We need you. We need Americans to rise up. We need this great big eagle to start flapping its wings while we still have that opportunity to fight. Americans came to our rescue many times, First War, Second War. We need America to rise up again.
and start roaring. Because if America falls, if Americans will allow what is happening in Canada, it's over for the free world. So I've decided to come here. People are asking me how that happened. How did they let me out? You see, when God wants you out, you're out. He opened the chains. He opened the doors, the prison, and I'm here. And I'm every day I'm speaking in different venues. Today I am in Chicago area. And not only I'm asking Americans to rise up, stand up, we have to unite against this tyranny. Help me to spread the word around and let more people know that we are under attack. In Canada, Chinese troops are being trained in my city, Calgary, in north part of Alberta. Chinese troops are being trained in British Columbia. We are being taken over by the communist Chinese evil government, and that should be a great concern to America, and I hope that I will be able to awaken many.
Pastor, what is the specific charge against you?
Inciting people to come to church. So that's my charge.
Well, I'm sorry, but did not Jesus Christ say, come and see?
Of course, we know, but again, we have to understand that we are being taken over by a communist government and they do not share our sentiments. You know, the Communist Party is the state religion. And if you're worshiping anyone else outside of that state religion, you are becoming a target. I grew up in a country like this. Of course, in China, you can see North Korea, what's really going on when the communist takes over. There is no freedom. There are no human rights. There is no constitution. No one cares about stuff like this. I grew up behind the Iron Curtain under the boots of the Soviets. And we were taught as kids, we were taught to call Stalin, Dedushka Stalin, Grandpa Stalin, the savior of mankind. That's a repetition. What we're seeing right now is the politicians, the wannabe gods, are dictating us whom we are to worship. So inciting people to come to church and opening a church service contrary to the restrictions, even though we have healthy people, even though we have the highest suicide rate in the history of Canada right now, people are desperate. They are desperate of a need for someone to give them hope. The government disagrees and sends SWAT team. I was arrested by anti-terrorists in the middle of a highway because I dared to oppose them. I dared to say no. I stood on the law of the country. We are being protected by three criminal codes. You know, you're not allowed to. What they did, it's against the law. You're not allowed to interfere with the clergyman while he's conducting his duties. You're not allowed to interfere with the church service. They've broken four criminal laws in the name of the COVID restrictions to make sure that I'm preaching wearing a mask. And it looks like the judges right now are so corrupted that they do not care about the Constitution. They do not care about the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. That should be very concerning to you, because what I hear in the States is like, oh, this will never happen to us. We have a Constitution. But you got to remember, for them, it's just a piece of paper. Poland had a Constitution all this time from 45 to 89, and the communist government did not care about our human rights and the Constitution. What? I see the repetition of history. You have to care about your rights.
What is the popular reaction, including but not limited to your church, to your arrest, your imprisonment, what's happening to other men of the cloth in Canada, as you were describing? Is there any popular revolt against Father Trudeau and those other politicians?
Well, the media is bought. Justin Trudeau came in public a couple months ago, and he was bragging about that he bought the mainstream media. And he did. Almost $3 billion he gave to mainstream media, and he said it on record. We own the media. So from the media, they're rejoicing. We're being tracked. I'm a criminal, convicted criminal right now. Praise God. Praise Justin Trudeau, our God. If it comes to people, more and more people are understanding what's really going on. They're scared. But Canadians as a whole are very weak. They have been brainwashed, manipulated, and scared for a very, very long time. An uprising. I see thousands of people rising up. There are protests
left and right right now. So it's happening. However, Americans are more open to freedom. It looks like you have this in your DNA, in your bloodstream, this resistance to tyrants. So I'm hoping that when Americans will rise up in a big scale, on a big scale, Canadians will follow. And that's why I'm here. I'm here to awaken a sleeping, a powerful eagle. So hopefully Canadians will follow.
Well, Pastor, if you ever decide to convert to Catholicism and run for Pope, let me know, because I'd love to support you. Pastor Arthur Pawlowski, he is a Polish-Canadian Protestant street preacher, pastor at Cave of Adullam Congregation in Calgary, also the founder of and pastor of Street Church Ministries. He is in Elmhurst tonight, 7 p.m. at the Diplomat West, which is 681 West North Avenue, right outside of downtown Elmhurst. Diplomat West in Elmhurst. Tickets are $22 a person. Get more information on his Courageous Faith / Reopen America tour at fecunited.com, fecunited.com. Pastor Pawlowski, welcome to Elmhurst this evening. Great to have you in our country and in our community, and best of luck with your tour and all of your fights to be had in Canada.
Thank you very much. God bless you.
And he joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J this morning is John Kay, as in John Cass. JohnCassNews.com, sign up, new column today. We're probably going to get to that about 8:30. You want to stay tuned, we'll talk a little bit about crime. But now we need to talk about the latest pronouncements from Utah Senator Philippe Pétain. He was on...
what was his fake name? Pepe Le Pew. Lafarge something.
No.
Something ridiculous. And
Carlos Danger.
No. That was somebody. that was the priapic aid.
Pope Priapic.
I wanted to play Dan Proft here. The priapic aid to some New York
Democrat. What the heck? Well...
Anyway, whatever.
Pierre Delecto.
Yeah, Pierre Delecto. Pierre Delecto, take your Jello that you eat out in Utah and enjoy it.
Philippe Pétain, Pierre Delecto. I mean, who can remember?
Pierre Delecto.
So anyway, he was on with Jay Tapper in his incredibly shrinking audience on CNN over the weekend, singing the praises of one Joe Biden. Look, I mean, if you can't trust Joe Biden after 50 years of robust intellectual consistency
Put
on the range of topics.
Put y'all in chains.
Right. If you can't trust him, who can you trust? Mitt Romney on the infrastructure deal. Will Republicans be able to salvage a leftist victory from the perils of defeat?
So President Biden originally said, if your compromise plan is the only bill that comes to his desk, quote, I'm not signing it. But then yesterday he issued a lengthy statement saying he supports the deal, and it was certainly not his intent to issue the veto threat. Is that good enough for you? Do you buy his new explanation?
Well, I do take the president at his word. And over the weeks and weeks of negotiations with Democrats and with the White House on an infrastructure bill, the president's other agenda was never linked to the infrastructure effort. We came to an agreement on the infrastructure effort in a way that I think is really impressive. As you know, it is true infrastructure. Bridges, roads, rail, electric utility support, and so forth, and without raising taxes. And so this is a bill which stands on its own. I am totally confident the president will sign it if it comes to his desk. The real challenge is whether the Democrats can get their act together and get it on his desk. And I think the battle that's going on is not with Republicans. Republicans are going to support true infrastructure that doesn't raise taxes. But Democrats want to do a lot of other things, and I think they're the ones that are having a hard time deciding how to proceed. I do trust the president.
I tell you what.
Outside of the I do trust the president, the other stuff, was that out of the pale?
Yes. Let me tell you why.
Dan Proft will tell me.
Well, First of all,
beyond the pale,
who needs Reparation H to cast tie-breaking votes when you have Republican senators like Mitt Romney? The most insult. Well, there's two things. One, this is Bain Capital guy, and you're going to spend $1 trillion without raising taxes? What is borrowing? It's a backdoor tax increase. So spare me, Bain Capital. Number three.
Can't we just borrow some more money from China?
Or print it?
Right.
That's also without a tax increase. And number three, the most insulting thing, then he pretends like he's a, you know, one of our partisan fighters. The Democrats can't get their act together because we're willing to spend $1 trillion. Hey, you know, take the trillion and let's all declare victory. Oh, I mean, really, you want to speed to oblivion if you're a Republican or a conservative in this country, then you get on the Mitt Romney train. And it'll be a bullet train, too. It costs about $100 billion, as California found out. For more on all this, pleased to be joined by Steve Moore, economist, Wall Street Journal columnist, Trumponomics author, target of NSA spying. We don't know. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, guys. By the way, this is the most atrocious bill. I estimate about 25 cents out of every dollar, so about 250 to 300 billion out of the 1.2 trillion is what most people would consider real infrastructure, building roads and you know, fixing bridges and tunnels and airports. The almost all the rest of it is this green energy crap.
Romney bill.
We don't dare call it the Green New Deal. But here's my point in listening to what you guys were just saying. If Republicans were half saying, they would be talking about how we could cut $1 trillion out of the budget, not add another $1 trillion. The debt is out of control in Washington. It's like mad cow disease when you've got Republicans. I mean, basically, folks, here's the situation. Joe Biden comes in with this ridiculous $6 trillion spending initiative with $2 trillion for infrastructure. And these skinflint Republicans say, no, we're not going to do $2 trillion. We're going to only do $1.2 trillion.
Well, right. And so, what is the thinking? We know what the thinking is. We want to play the same game as the Democrats, which is
a little cheaper than there. We're just a little cheaper than there.
Right.
And by the way, I mean, there's so much bad stuff in here. I just want to point out one because it got headlines yesterday. It's in the newspapers today. But just to give you a sense of how crazy Washington is now, they want to build 600,000 electric vehicle charging stations paid for by taxpayers. By the way, Dan, I don't think the taxpayers ever paid for gasoline stations around the country, right? Mm-hmm. Why in the world is it the taxpayers' responsibility to pay for people to charge up their EVs, which, by the way, we're going to subsidize people by $80,000, $90,000,
$100,000 Teslas? Well, all we hear is, hey, look, this is a job creator, even though the Tax Foundation finds it to be a job loser. This is about building back better, Steve. And you had ADP this morning, 692,000 jobs expectedly created in June, which beat the street expectations. If that holds up, we'll find out on Friday. But, it's all going well. We just need a little bit more spending. You know what? Maybe around another round of COVID relief checks after this.
Yeah. Well, you're exactly right, and that's they're coming. By the way, they've got the $3,000 per child payment on top of the $2,000 per person. We already sent people the helicopter money, plus the $300 a week unemployment benefits, plus the rental assistance that they've just extended in many states, so you don't have to pay rent. And then they've got the food stamps, and then they've got. I mean, this is just it's amazing that anybody's working. Frankly, ladies and gentlemen, if you're driving to work right now, thank God for you, because you've got people probably making more money sitting on their duff watching Netflix on their couch, making more than you are because of all these ridiculous government assistance programs. But I want to go back to my main point. In a sane world right now, we would be cutting government spending by at least $1 trillion. We don't need massive new spending. COVID is over. It's over. Done. Trump beat it with the vaccine. We can cut government spending now and move back to normal. Instead, Biden obviously is using, what's the old expression by your good friend Rahm Emanuel? Remember, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Well, the crisis is over. They're still not wasting it.
I'd rather go with United Negro College Fund, which is a mind is a terrible thing to waste, and we seem to be wasting that, too.
In the
that's a great point, too.
You were talking just a moment ago about people going to work and those who aren't going to work. And we know why they're not going to work, because every restaurant owner that I know in Chicago has to pay $20 an hour and more for dishwashers. Okay. And
you, John, can I just interrupt you for 1 second?
Yes, please.
Yeah, but they have degrees from the all Seven Sisters.
All they have to do is pay their workers more money. That's all they have to do. Isn't that creepy the way Biden is whispering?
It's a good Biden impression.
That was, yeah, that was.
You're so, they just have to pay their workers more money. And it's like, well, mm-hmm. that's great for a guy who's never had a business in his life, never in 45 years hasn't even worked in a real job. And he's telling these small businesses, your friends and my friends and people run in restaurants and small businesses, oh, just go out and raise your wages. He has no idea. A restaurant, you know what the profit margin is on a restaurant? It's about 2, 3, 4. A good restaurant maybe makes 4 or 5% margin. Even a little, you know, McDonald's or Burger King, they've got these tiny profit margins. You increase their costs right now, you're going to put them right out of business, Joe Biden.
So as to the whispering, it reminds me of the child going mad in the Conrad Aiken story, Silent Snow, Secret Snow. But as far as the, it was a terrifying story. But as far as the restaurants go, what happened, or all workers, what happens to those workers who don't, who can come back now and tell the boss, nah, I'm not ready? What happens to them when the stimulus checks finally run out and they're desperate for a job?
Well, at the first, a couple points. I have a good friend who lives in Austin, Texas, and he sent me this photo yesterday. His office overlooks an employment agency. And he was telling me that for the last 3 or 4 months, you know, very sporadically somebody would walk into the employment office, but it was pretty dormant, pretty empty. And then he showed me a photograph of what it looked like yesterday. Now, why is this important? Because on Saturday, guess what happened in Texas, Dan?
What happened in Texas on Saturday?
They ended the $300 a week unemployment.
Well, finally. What took them so long?
They quote, slashed, as the New York Times would say, they slashed the social safety net. And so all of a sudden, he shows me this picture. Guess what? The line is out the door of people going to look for jobs now. It's just funny how that happens, isn't it?
It says something else, too, and this is not just about the minimum wage. This is about more than half the country being essentially beholden to transfer payments, which is where
exactly.
we're tracking.
Exactly.
But there was this recent study, and this is a sort of an innovative take on an old debate, minimum wage. Craig Richardson, who's an econ professor at Winston-Salem University, he looked at hourly wage at $7.25. versus hourly wage at $15, the fight for 15, which we've been debating for the last two or 3 years.
Right.
And once you factor in all the social benefits and what you get at the $7.25 an hour versus what you get at the $15 an hour, the total monthly benefits and after-tax income, the separation for double the hourly wage is less than $200. That's how expanded the social welfare benefits are, even as you go up from $7.25 to $15.
Right.
We see in the expanded unemployment benefits that are temporary, like you were saying, but all the child tax credits, all of this stuff, it's just the creep up the income scale to make everybody or a majority dependent on transfer payments.
So, you know, in Illinois, as you know, Casey Mulligan did this study for us at the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. It was in the Wall Street Journal a couple of weeks ago. And we looked at the average benefit package that a family of four can get in Illinois and then the maximum benefit. And the average benefit is the equivalent of about $15 to $16 an hour, a job, you know, having a job. In other words, you're getting benefits the equivalent of going out and getting a $16 job. But the maximum benefit that people can get is up to $28 an hour. Now, how can a restaurant get kitchen help? How can you possibly compete with that? And by the way, this gets to John's point. Having people unemployed now for almost 18 months is a terrible thing. Every study, even Brookings Institute left-wing groups show the longer people stay unemployed, the worse it is for them, even if we're paying them, and especially when we're paying them to stay unemployed. It leads to a sclerosis of their job skills. It has negative effects on their family, on their kids. Unemployment is a bad thing. Work is a good thing. There's dignity. There's purpose in getting up and going to work.
But you don't understand. You don't understand what America, what the Democrats want to give us is one style of shoe, perhaps orange, that we could get at the store. And the other and the other thing is vodka for everybody, right? And then we're fine.
Well, the question I ask you guys, I know you're doing that questioning, but do you think this is purposeful? I mean,
yes.
Are they really just trying to make everyone dependent on government?
Of course.
Of course they are.
Because if they are, they're succeeding. If that's their mission, I got to give them credit. They're succeeding.
That's right. A dependent is a loyal constituent. Steve Moore, economist, Wall Street Journal columnist, Trumponomics author. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Oh, by the way, one thing on the way out.
Yes.
Never very happy for the drive.
That, you know, that Biden impersonation may be even creepier than Creepshow Joe. That's how good it is.
Thank you, Conrad Aiken.
Steve, happy Independence Day. Talk to you later. He joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. this morning, former Chicago Tribune columnist, who you can now find at johncastnews.com, John Cass. John.
Dan.
You know, people really have some gall questioning the accuracy of the administration of elections and the counting of votes. There's just no place for that in America. That undermines our democracy.
Tell it to Jake Tapper. Didn't he write a book about it?
Yeah.
Well, when it was on the other side?
This is, these are people, these are sour grapes people. They're conspiracy theorists. There's no problem with the administration of elections in America, particularly in Democrat-controlled states, particularly in Democrat-dominated big cities.
I suggest they watch The Great McGinty with about Chicago votes.
Or they could just listen to Democrats in New York, like, what was her name? Wiley, Maya Wiley. Her advisor, Patrick Gaspard. Someone please tell the New York City Board of Elections that the 1900s just called and would like to get their manual tally sheets back. City Councilman Ben Kallos from Manhattan, Democrat. Now is as good a time as any to blow up the Board of Elections, get rid of the patronage, and start over. So, what's the problem? Well, the problem is that the Board of Elections in New York City has botched the count on the city's first ranked choice election, adding 135,000 pre-election test ballots that hadn't been cleared from the computer.
So you count them again and again until you get what you want, see? Said Johnny Rocco in Key Largo.
Doing, exactly. That's a nice Johnny Rocco reference.
That's right.
And so, you know, any type of auditing of an election, any type of checking the count, that is illegitimate. I mean, if you're doing it in furtherance of the 2020 election or as a check to the 2020 election or as a sort of a best practices review of how you administer elections prospectively for the 2022 and beyond elections. All of that in Maricopa County, in Pennsylvania, in Georgia, illegitimate because we don't have any problems with elections in this country. Just look at New York City. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Ken Blackwell, board member of the Public Interest Legal Foundation and former Ohio Secretary of State, so he knows something about the administration of elections. Ken, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, John. Good to be with you.
How about that cluster frack in New York City? New York City's not showing very well, is it?
No, it isn't. But, you know, the left, the Democrats, Pelosi, Schumer, they are running a frontal attack on our constitutional republic and our election integrity in this country. Look, it is very clear that they are hell-bent on making sure that they federalize elections, that they create a model that is taken out of the pages of the books of other status throughout human history. And Aristotle, as we've talked about before, summed it up right when he said that, you know, there's a direct relationship between the organized power of the state and the flourishing of individual liberty. The more muscular the central government or the state, the less human liberty. And so our founders put a harness on the growth and reach of the federal government, decentralized power, invested power now in the 50 states, not in the central government. And that is the way that we protect against a form of government that is now filling the pages or the ash bin of history. And that is forms of government that believe that great nations are the products of great government, not of good people doing great things and free people doing great things together. So this frontal attack must be dealt with if we're to have confidence in the results of our elections.
A smart bartender I know in Chicago told me years ago, before I started writing a column, that the political control begins and ends in the city of Chicago with the Chicago Board of Elections. And I find that to be true after, you know, 30, 40 years doing this. The question being, what is so wrong about federalizing the elections nationally so that we're all on the same page, say the Democrats? We're all doing the same thing. Just you tell me what's wrong with it. I have my own theories, but.
Well, look, again, what we know is that in elections, if you want to build confidence, there are a couple of tracks that you have to make sure are secure. First is the chain of custody. That means that you want less vulnerability of something going wrong between the time the voter casts his or her ballot and when it's counted. And so we want to have a tight chain of custody. The second thing is that you want a verification process or practice that helps you to understand and guarantee that a person is who he or she claims to be. When you have good verification systems, a tight chain of command, you in fact have elections that people can have confidence in. If you put power in Washington, D.C., take it out of the hands of local folks, what you get is a chain of custody that is very vulnerable, very loose. And if you look at what the Democrats are calling for, and that is to do away with verification processes and practices like voter ID. And so you create a context where people are doubting the authenticity and the legitimacy of election results. And that is a recipe for chaos.
What did you make of Bill Barr's interview by Jonathan Carl that appeared in The Atlantic? Of course, this was picked up by the D.C. press corps as a cudgel to, you know, whack any Trump supporter who wants to see what comes of the Maricopa County audit or wants to see other election reforms advance in the states in question from 2020 in advance of 2022 so they can have more confidence where you're speaking about. Your reaction to what Bill Barr had to say about the back and forths he had with the president over the election?
Well, look, at the end of the day, I don't want the central government, the federal government, and federal bureaucrats running elections. And so I'm part of a movement outside of Washington that basically wants to secure the rights of state legislatures to determine the time, place, and manner of elections. That is what is at risk. And if, in fact, you're supporting the attack on state legislatures doing that, you know, I think you're Looney Tunes. If, in fact, you're supporting that, I think you understand that in 245 years, this country has become the most robust the most free constitutional republic in all of human history, and that is because we got something right. I'll go back to it. When you put a harness on the reach and power of government, you, in fact, you create a context where individual liberty flourishes. Anybody who talks about centralized control of elections or who badmouths people who are pushing for decentralization and local control, state control of elections, you know, we're in a fight.
And that was evidenced again this week with the decision by the Department of Justice to file suit against the state of Georgia per its election reform law. Really curious case.
Just look at that. I mean, look, let's just talk about it. I think we've talked about it before. Let's just take voter ID, which is a part of the Georgia reforms. If you take a look at that, look at the fact that the Justice Department is attacking that as racist, you know, and it's a throwback to Jim Crowism. You know, it is crazy because they then moved the All-Star game from Atlanta to Denver, Colorado. If you look at Colorado's election laws, practices, and rules, they are more restrictive than the Georgia reform laws. And so it's a major contradiction. It's hypocrisy, and it's just flat out wrong. And we must resist this sort of stupidity.
And just on,
speaking of which, I'm sorry.
Well, just one more, because I want to get the John Lewis voting rights law too, because this is relevant. It's relevant to that suit that was filed by DOJ. And when you keep talking about federalization of the election, I just want people to understand this and some of the nomenclature that's used to indicate the truth of what you're saying. The John Lewis bill would resurrect preclearance rules nationwide. In other words, at the state level, you would have to get federal clearance before you could change your election laws. And that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yes. Look, the Voting Rights Act of 1965 is a landmark piece of federal legislation in the United States that prohibits racial discrimination in voting. It was signed into law by Lyndon Johnson. And it is one of the most far-reaching pieces of civil rights legislation in U.S. history. It targeted the election practices of 9 southern states and some northern jurisdictions. And it said that they had to operate under preclearance. There could not be any changes of any of their laws without preclearance. Well, that is no longer in place. But the left, Pelosi, Schumer, what they want to do is to do this new so-called John Lewis Act, which is nothing more than a Pelosi power grab. What they want to do now is place all 50 states under preclearance, which means that there could not be any change in any election law or practice or rule or policy.
Right,
because unless it was pre-cleared by bureaucrats in Washington D.C.
Because things are worse because things are worse in America today than they were in 1965, right?
Yeah, right out of the 1619, projects, New York Times 1619 projects playbook. They claim that America is irreparably racist, must be flattened, must be radically changed. And our former government must be fundamentally transformed into something right out of, you know, Marx and Lenin and Mao, you know, state control.
Two is good, four is better, said George Orwell. And listen, I need to ask you about Stacey Abrams because of Georgia, because she was the darling of the Shriekers.
Shadow governor.
Yeah, she's governor, right? She's governor of Georgia, or just in her own mind? But
she hasn't conceded yet.
But I recall her shouting at the top of her lungs to all her friendly listening audience, MSNBC, the Washington Press Corps, that voter ID was Jim Crow. And lately, I've been hearing her say, that no one has ever objected to having to prove to vote. Now, I'm wondering, now, most Americans think that voter ID is a pretty common sense thing. So right. I vote, and therefore the great McGinty doesn't vote in my stead, right? I'm sure you've seen that movie.
Well, look, guys, let me just tell you, right? I went right at Stacey on this. You know, she was advocating, along with her woke friends at Coca-Cola and Delta, that they moved the All-Star game to Denver, and as out of Atlanta. You know, this was a game that was all around voter ID and other common sense practices. This was a game that was going to generate $110 million, you know, for the businesses and entrepreneurs of Atlanta, a city that is over 50% black. They moved it to Denver, Colorado, you know, and which is 9% black, and Colorado has more restrictive voting rules and regulations than the reforms in Georgia. It's just crazy. If you two guys were coming down to Cincinnati, I would just frame this. I'm probably the only shareholder of a Major League Baseball team that has ever administered a statewide election. If you guys were coming to Cincinnati to see the Cubbies play the Reds,
never would, because I don't watch the Cubs. But anyway,
or the White Sox, and if I sent you tickets, I told you that there would be two tickets for you at the will call window, in order to pick up those tickets, what would you guys have to show?
Present ID, perhaps?
My good faith?
They got a library book. To get on an airplane, to go to Coca-Cola's headquarters in Atlanta.
To buy cigarettes.
God, that's right. It is so commonplace that it is just foolhardy to suggest that black folks or any other folks would object to it.
But why do the issue to me is twofold. One, the media seems to carry the water of those crying racism on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And two, the media, because they don't really care about what's going on the ground, don't seem to understand that black people are somewhat skeptical of the new immigrants coming in, and they're really not all that upset about voter ID.
No, we're not upset about voter ID. And guys, I'll probably have to close out in 2 minutes, but let me just tell you this. This is a frontal attack on the progress that we made under Donald Trump. Donald Trump really did. He cut regulations. He cut taxes. He created an environment for cheap energy. He rebalanced trade. He increased defense spending. He had arms transferred for our allies, which created jobs and built a stronger alliance for freedom across the globe. And he lifted family incomes, dropped unemployment, and somehow that sort of freedom, that sort of prosperity needs to be undone by the left. The left wants to undo it. That's what this is all about, to put them in control of the nation's agenda. This is crazy. We must resist.
Ken Blackwell, board member of the Public Interest Legal Foundation, former Ohio Secretary of State. Ken, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Oh, good to be with you.
Thanks. And he joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy looking to, and in for Amy this morning, of course, John Cass, johncass.com. And John, we're on pace to have a record year of carjacking in the city of Chicago. And Cook County is contributing, too. I don't want to leave them out, suburban Cook County.
Right.
You probably saw the story about this restaurant worker in Blue Island, Rogelio Hurtado, who was beaten, choked, and had a gun pointed in his face before he was knocked unconscious briefly. Had his possessions stolen outside of this restaurant he works at in Blue Island. And this is just the way of living in Chicago and Cook County. You wrote about it sort of writ large in your latest piece that's posted at johncast.com, johncastnews.com this morning. What's your take on it in terms of the political fallout?
Locally or nationally?
Both.
Okay, nationally, the Democrats have a problem. They are the authors of chaos and the loss of order nationally in the cities. You're seeing the crime spiking terribly. Aldermen in Chicago are demanding to meet with Superintendent Brown. They're reacting to what people, black, brown, and white, are reacting to, which is they're sick of crime. They don't want to be afraid in their own backyards. They don't want their kids shot off their porches. The problem is that when the Democrats and their media bootlickers, I guess we could say, since you didn't like the licking metaphor earlier in the morning.
A little graphic,
yeah, but I didn't mention the larvae of flies, did I?
No, you did
not. But whatever it is, whether it's the tongue of a loyal dog from the media or the larvae of flies, the Democrats are insisting that their wound be cleansed. This wound is going to hurt them in the 2022 elections. And in my column today, the Democrats and their self-inflicted wound, I write about one of these wounds. It's crime.
But you separate...
Did I answer your question?
Well, are you,
probably not.
From what I'm hearing, though...
What?
You're separating Chicago from much of the rest of the country when it comes to any political consequences. Because what you're talking about, the only thing that matters to these political ruling class types is electoral consequences. You're saying there's going to be electoral consequences that may be visited upon their House and Senate majorities.
Yes, there will be, particularly the House.
But in cities like Chicago, what happens?
In cities like Chicago.
And not in 22, but 23.
23, if you bring it up, you're a racist.
Mm-hmm.
We can't, your friends in your social, what do we call them, the Chardonnay Antifa, in the suburbs will say, are you listening to John Cass and Dan Prof talk? Oh, no, we can't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll
happily send their kids to Lollapalooza, those same
champagne there
socialists.
You go.
The
there
Mercedes
you go.
Marxists in the Hinsdale, you send your kids to Lollapalooza.
You hit the point.
And that goes for anybody.
How about
that? Are
4th
you
of July, are you sending your kids downtown?
Yeah, for no fireworks. Are you sending your kids to Navy Pier for 4th of July? Are you sending your kids to Lollapalooza? Are you trying to bribe them like... our friend Sean from Omwood Park, to not go to Lollapalooza. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. You take one position at the cocktail party or the block gathering, and then when it comes to your kids, it's a different decision, isn't it?
I'll tell you the decision I made, and even though my sons are grown men and with lives of their own, I just said, as your dad, you want to go to a beach? Go find a beach in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
If you're hanging on a beach in Chicago and the sun goes down, and that's when you want to hang, right? I mean, did we forget all that? You think it's fun to be on a beach at 10 o'clock in the morning? No, when you're a kid, when you're a young guy, a young woman, you want to hang out when the sun goes down. And anybody who's hanging out when the sun goes down in Chicago has to understand that you could put a big V on your forehead saying victim, because that's what you want to be.
Well, the other thing, too, is for me, you know, people say, is it like bad? Are you afraid to be downtown? Yeah. I said, no, I'm not afraid, but I...
As long as you keep those divvy bike gangs away from me.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But I don't want to be put in a position to do something I don't want to do.
Right.
That's what I don't want. And I'm sure police feel the same way. Unfortunately for them, it's their job. It's not my job.
You know, Dan, one of the problems of the defund the police... nationally, the demonizing of law enforcement nationally and in Chicago, you've seen it, Lori Lightfoot, Kim Fox, Tim Evans, all of them, is that they're about 1,500 cops short now in Chicago. And nationally, you've done shows about this. Nationally, no one wants to be a cop. So they're losing people at a time when they need people.
And this is perfect in terms of that the press shop for the Dem Socialists, which is the local daily papers in the big cities.
Yeah.
And how they try to run interference for the politicians. So Jenny Durkin, the outgoing mayor of Seattle, and her Summer of Love last year. Remember the Summer of Love in Seattle?
Yeah.
And the autonomous zone.
The autonomous zone.
Seattle Times, you know, Seattle's one of those cities that's murder rate is up 25% to 40%. I mean, Minneapolis, George Floydville is up 50% this year over last year. One of the most violent years in the last 30.
A friend of mine, a friend of my brother's in Virginia, lives in Virginia now, and just retired from the Minneapolis police. And Nick said, "Well, aren't you contacting them?" And he said, "If they contact me, I'm gone anyway, so I don't care."
Mm-hmm.
That's the attitude.
Seattle Times, lead story, above the fold, for those still getting the print edition. Heat inequality.
Pardon me?
Heat, like temperature, hot?
Yeah, like the temperature of a barrel of a gun when it's fired at you.
For example, right. Heat inequality. In county, it's hottest where vulnerable, less affluent people live. So they got an equity problem in Seattle.
Who wrote that story and who edited it?
It's all
what mindless moron of an editor said, you know what we need? We need that.
Evan Bush, Seattle Times staff reporter, wrote it. There's all hands on deck. We can't worry about crime, autonomous zones, that business. All hands on deck. We have got to reorient the sun in terms of how it hits various neighborhoods in Seattle.
Because the sun is the center, or the earth is the center of the universe, and that pesky sun.
We have it in Miami, too. Did you not hear Jennifer Granholm yesterday on CNN talking about that condo building collapse?
Yeah.
Can't rule out climate change.
Do you think that climate could have played a role in that building's collapse?
Well, obviously, we don't know fully, but we do know that the seas are rising.
But I thought Obama saved us from the seas. Remember when the seas stopped rising when he was
parted
elected?
Them.
He parted them, like Moses.
Yes.
So you're seeing this all over. What you're in Chicago and in Cook County, what you're not seeing, you're seeing aldermen demand meeting. You're seeing, reporters going up to the aldermen.
David Brown is meeting with gangbangers.
You know what you're not seeing? You're not seeing reporters outside Tony Preckwinkle's office saying, "Hey, you've defunded the jail. You've gotten people out of jail. People who should be on trial and in jail are committing murder. What about you and your protege, Kim Fox, and the other stooge of the Three Stooges, Judge Evans?" Nobody in the press is calling them to account.
I mean, it's hard to gauge because there's never been not in the past 35 years has an alternative been presented, not since Don Hader ran for mayor.
Yeah.
But what if my theory about Chicago is antiquated?
Which theory?
It's outdated. And it's just not true anymore.
What?
The theory that, you know, you see Richard Reardon win mayor of L.A. You see Rudy Giuliani, even Bloomberg to some extent, win mayor of New York. And so we don't have to have these munchkin mayors who cover up incompetence with false bravado like we've had for the past 35 years. We don't have to have that. In point of fact, we're a more culturally conservative city than a lot of big cities in America. I used to think that because of, you know, guys in the trades and more common sense Midwestern type people. But maybe that's not true. Maybe that's all wrong. Maybe this is one of the most left cities in America from a philosophical perspective.
And clearly from a media perspective.
Right.
But, you know, the Democratic Party. Well, look, I think that people who would vote against this stuff, who'd vote against Pritzker, who showed up with his mask the other day warning everybody, "Hey, we're going to lock down your schools again." I mean, that kind of warning with the mask alone, or Lightfoot's nonsense, or Tony Preckwinkle not being asked any questions because the woke warriors of the Chicago newsrooms don't want to, you know, upset their philosophical apple cart. All this is of a piece.
There's no market for it.
Yes, there is a market.
Is there?
I'm writing.
Well, okay.
There will be when Kristen McQuarrie starts writing. You know, we thought we would be the last ones to turn out the lights, and we're not. But I think that for the most part, Dan, your theory holds water except for one thing. How many people who would vote against all this nonsense have already left?
Yeah, they're gone. Or they're on the way out and they've they've washed their hands of it. Steve on the South Side.
Speaking about people leaving, I think, all these people that earned a living in the city because they had to, we should make a new law that they can't move out of the state if they're deriving a pension from state, local, or municipal government, or the businesses that get their money from state government. Mm-hmm. That would help the economic situation.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Joe in Munster. Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah. You know, John Kath just said it, the apple cart. The apple cart is create these crises. They want these crises. So, and Emmanuel gave us the playbook. Then they can take advantage of all of them, whether it's the voting rights or Chicago. Chicago runs Illinois because it has the greatest population. Well, that's what would happen if we had this national voting right, or your 1,500 police that you're short in the city. That's created. They want that. Make them own it.
Thanks for the call, Joe. Mike on the North Side.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. John, the club's going to be open at Saturday. I'm cooking. Come on by in the afternoon.
Okay,
I wanted to say this crime in the city is nothing new. They've been going downtown. The press just hasn't been reporting it. Now, about 6 years ago, Dan, you were on vacation in December, chasing the links, chasing the golf ball, and your ex-partner from the other station, Bruce Wolf, was on with Amy, and they had someone from Rahm's administration saying, come downtown the Navy Pier for, you know, all the things for the kids and that. And I called in and said, it's dangerous. Go early and leave by 12. And Amy says, oh, no, you can't say that. Chicago's a wonderful place. Well, it's a wonderful place if you're not being mugged. And the Democrats in the city, in the county, in the state, and in the nation have put criminals ahead of families. Remember that.
Thanks for the call, Mike. I just having this text exchange with two friends of mine from the North Shore who left for Georgia and Florida, respectively. We're talking about playing golf this summer. I said, you know, you should guys come back to Illinois. It's a wonderful place to plan a destination golf trip.
We've got great restaurants, but the fact is you can't sit outside at them because you don't want to get cracked in the head by a group of kids running past you.
Great golf courses, good restaurants, a few days. It's a nice place to visit.
And just think, when Rahm and his friends install Arne Duncan as the next mayor, as the white knight, and don't think that's not happening. They'll turn the media spin around how Chicago is revitalized. It's moving forward again.
Chuck and Delavan.
Hey, you were talking about the beaches. We're waiting up here at Chuck's over here in Fontana to see if Pritzker, your Jelly Belly guy, is going to come. Last year, he was laying on a beach. We all pushed him back in. We thought he was a beach whale. Hey, one thing that was really funny was Biden was worried about pipelines and getting pipelines. He shuts down the biggest pipeline that was coming our way, and gas was $1 a gallon, everybody, last year up in Wisconsin with like 99 cents, and now it's over $3. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Chuck.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.